Usually when you navigate the physical world, getting lost is a it's a gradual sensation.
Right, like you actually have time to process it.
Exactly. You're driving down a road, the scenery starts looking unfamiliar, the street signs stop matching the map, you slowly realize you've taken a wrong turn somewhere.
But when you navigate the digital landscape, that gradual realization is completely stripped away.
It really is. It's replaced by a brick wall. You click a link, a DNS request fires off, the routing happens in milliseconds.
And instantly, you are standing in a void.
Yes, it's entirely binary. You are either exactly where you intended to be, getting that 200 OK status, or you are nowhere at all.
And that nowhere doesn't give you any landmarks to find your way back. It just flatly halts your momentum.
We've all been there, right? Staring at a stark white screen that absolutely refuses to serve up the repository or the portfolio we were looking for.
Oh, countless times.
Well, welcome to the Deep Dive. I'm your host, and as always, I'm joined by our resident systems expert to unpack things. And today, for you listening right now, we have a very unusual set of source material.
Yeah, we really do. We aren't analyzing a newly published white paper or a piece of investigative journalism today.
No, our focus is literally just a handful of sentences. We are doing a complete architectural and philosophical teardown of the exact literal text of the GitHub page's 404 error page.
To a lot of developers, and well, just users in general, an error page is just an annoyance, something to be instantly clicked away from.
Right, a minor frustration.
But an error page of this specific nature, one generated by a massive static hosting environment like GitHub pages, is actually an incredibly precise diagnostic tool.
It's not just a digital shoulder shrug.
Exactly. The specific vocabulary used in these few sentences reveals the underlying logic of how servers define existence, security, and, user responsibility.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because on the surface, reading the text of a 404 error sounds, it sounds like reading the terms and conditions on a router firmware update.
It sounds incredibly dry, yeah.
But hidden in this brief text is a whole set of invisible rules about web hosting and exactness. Our mission today is to decode the specific language of this digital dead end. We want to understand what it actually means at the metal level when a website breaks.
The instinct is always just pure frustration. But if we actually analyze the text GitHub serves up, we start to see the entire architecture of the static web.
Right.
The text immediately separates the symptom you are experiencing from the root cause of the failure. And it does so by strictly defining what is working before it ever defines what is broken.
Let's look at that foundational statement. It starts with the universal identifier, just the number 404, followed by file not found.
The classic.
But then it delivers a highly specific, almost clinical sentence. It says, the site configured at this address does not contain the requested file.
That phrasing is key.
Yeah, configured at this address is doing a lot of heavy lifting there. I view it almost like a successfully routed logistics delivery.
Oh, I like that analogy.
Like, the DNS successfully mapped your domain, the request hit the GitHub load balancers, the routing tables found the exact virtual host container. I mean, the site is absolutely fully constructed and configured.
Right, the building is there.
Exactly. The street address exists, the building is fully constructed, but the specific item you walked in to buy the requested file simply isn't on the shelves.
It is drawing a hard boundary around the health of the infrastructure.
Mm.
Because, in the broader context of HTTP status codes, users frequently conflate client-side errors with server-side errors.
Yeah, all the time.
Like a 500-level error means the server itself is having an internal crisis, a database crashed, or a script timed out. The architecture is actively failing.
But this 404 text explicitly tells the developer, hey, the infrastructure is operating perfectly.
Yes. The server is essentially boasting about its own health while denying your request.
That's such a funny way to put it, but it's true. It's like, I'm doing great, but you messed up.
In a way, yes. The text clearly states the site is actively running. The server successfully received the HTTP GET request. It parsed the host header, and it located the deployment associated with that address.
So by stating it does not contain the requested file, it drastically narrows the scope of the problem.
Exactly. It's telling the developer that they don't need to check their DNS propagation or call their domain registrar. The issue is entirely a localized matter of inventory.
Which really shifts the entire burden of troubleshooting onto the creator's deployment process. If the address is routing perfectly and the server just waiting to serve content, we have to look at why a file is missing.
Because let's face it, usually when you hit this page on your own project, you push that file to the main branch.
Oh yeah, you literally watch the build process complete. And that brings us to the specific troubleshooting criteria the text lays out for the builder.
The text anticipates the developer's confusion immediately. It pivots to conditional diagnostics. It says, if this is your site, make sure that the filename case matches the URL as well as any file permissions.
I have deployed static sites and stared at this exact sentence, completely baffled.
It's a very dense set of instructions.
It really is. The text specifically highlights that the filename case must match the URL. We are so used to modern computing environments abstracting case sensitivity away.
Especially local environments like Windows or macOS.
Right. If I search my local drive for a file named style.css with a capital S, the OS will happily return style.css with a lowercase s. But GitHub Pages strips that abstraction away completely.
It forces the user to interact with the server on the server's exact terms. You have to remember, GitHub Pages runs on Unix-based infrastructure.
Right, which is notoriously literal.
Very literal. At the lowest memory levels, a capital S and a lowercase s are not just different letters, they are entirely different ASCII values.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a capital S is an integer value of 83, and a lowercase s is 115. To the server's file system, asking for style.css, when only style.css exists, is like asking for a file named entirely differently.
It's like a bouncer at an exclusive club with a perfectly literal guest list. If your ID says Dave with a capital D, but the list says Dave lowercase, you just don't get in.
That's exactly it. The server does not possess human intuition. It operates on strict byte-for-byte syntax matching.
If the binary sequence of the URL doesn't perfectly match the binary sequence of the file pointer, the server treats the file as non-existent.
And that's why the case matching is the very first diagnostic step.
Okay, that exactness makes sense for case matching. It's an unforgiving literalism. But I have to push back on the second half of that diagnostic sentence.
The file permissions part.
Yeah. It groups case matching with any file permissions. Why are file permissions lumped into the same breath as a capitalization typo?
That's a really good question.
Right, because if I misspell a file name, it genuinely doesn't exist. But if a file has the wrong permissions, it does exist, it's just locked. Why does the server throw a file not found error for a file that is sitting right there on the disk?
From a human perspective, a typo and a locked door are entirely different problems. But we have to look at how a web server defines existence in a public-facing environment.
Okay, tell me more.
This comes down to security protocols and the principle of least privilege. If a file exists on the server, but its permissions, its Schraba values, are set so that the public web user cannot read it, the server could theoretically throw a 403 forbidden error.
Right, a 403 tells the user, hey, I see the file, but you aren't on the list to view it.
But in many static hosting architectures, even confirming the existence of a restricted file is considered a security risk.
Wait, really? Just acknowledging it exists is a risk?
Absolutely. If a malicious actor is probing a server for vulnerabilities or searching for hidden configuration files, returning a 403 forbidden confirms that they have found a valid target.
Oh, wow. It gives them a footprint of the directory structure.
Exactly. You are giving away the blueprint of your server. So, to a server attempting to securely serve a public static site, a file without public read permissions is functionally identical to a blank wall.
The system simply drops the request into the void. It just returns the 404.
Yep. The text groups case matching and permissions together because, to the developer trying to debug their deployment, both a typo in the URL and an overly restrictive permission lock trigger the exact same routing failure.
That makes total sense now. So the developer has to verify the ASCII values of their URLs and audit the read access of their deployment.
That's the first line of defense.
But this strict syntax requirement assumes you are explicitly asking for a specific file. What happens when you aren't?
What do you mean?
I mean, I've had this exact error page when I just typed in the naked domain name of a project without appending a slash or a specific HTML page. I didn't ask for a file to be miscapitalized or locked, but the server still threw a 404 missing file error.
Yes. That leads directly to the core convention of web architecture, which the text explicitly addresses next. It dictates the behavior for the default state.
Right. It says, and I quote, for root URLs, you must provide an index.html file. And it gives http.example.com as the example.
It's a very specific instruction.
So what does this all mean? The text is incredibly rigid here. The phrase root URLs refers to the base address, right? Just the domain itself.
Exactly.
And the server is demanding a very specific file, index.html. It doesn't say this file is highly recommended or that it's a best practice. It says you must provide it.
It's an absolute requirement.
It's like the root URL is the cover of a book. And if the root URL is the cover, the index.html is the mandatory table of contents the server demands before it will let you open the book at all. Why is the system so uncompromising about this one specific file name?
Because without a default target, the server's routing engine is totally paralyzed. When you request a specific URI, like contact.html, the server searches the directory tree for that exact string.
Right, it has a specific mission.
But when you request a root URL, you are essentially pointing at an entire directory on the server and just asking it to respond.
You aren't asking for a specific document, you're just asking for the folder itself.
And historically, in the early days of the web, if you pointed a browser at a directory without a specific file request, servers like NCSA, HTTPD, or Apache would generate a directory listing.
Oh, I remember those.
Right. They would literally show the visitor a raw, clickable list of every single file and folder sitting in that directory.
Which is a massive security nightmare for modern web applications.
An absolute nightmare. You are exposing your entire source tree, your uncompiled assets, hidden scripts, everything. To prevent this, modern server configurations disable directory listings entirely.
Especially strict static hosts like GitHub pages.
Yes, they turn it off by default. But that leaves the server with a dilemma. You asked for a directory, it refuses to list the directory for security reasons, so what does it serve you?
It needs a default anchor.
It needs a default memory pointer. And decades of convention established index.html as the universal starting line.
So that's why the text uses the word must.
Exactly. The GitHub Pages routing engine is hard-coded to automatically append index.html to any naked directory request. If you point a user to your root URL and you haven't explicitly deployed a file with that exact name, the server attempts its default routing, finds nothing, and is forced to return the 404 void.
It's a fascinating look at how a seemingly arbitrary naming convention from the 1990s has just, well, calcified into an absolute law of server architecture.
It really has.
If you don't have that mandatory anchor, your entire deployment is unmoored.
Which brings us to the final part of the page.
Right. So we've dissected the diagnostic mechanics. We know the infrastructure is healthy, but the inventory is empty. We understand the unforgiving byte-level reality of case sensitivity and the security logic behind permission-based 404s.
And the absolute necessity of the default index.html anchor.
Yes. But what if a developer has audited their repo, checked every uppercase letter, verified their file permissions, confirmed their index file is sitting at the root, and they are still staring at this white screen? Where does the text route their frustration next?
At the very bottom of the page, the text pivots away from local diagnostics. It actually offers two distinct paths for resolution. It provides a static resource and a dynamic pulse.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because these two lifelines represent a stark philosophical duality in software development.
They definitely do.
The first directive says, read the full documentation for more information about using GitHub pages. And directly beneath that, the second directive simply says, GitHub status at GitHub status.
It's quite the contrast.
It's massive. We have an internal locus of control right next to an external locus of control. On one hand, you have the documentation. That is a heavy static instruction.
It implies that the system is functioning perfectly.
Right. It says the rules are documented, and if your site isn't working, the fault lies in your lack of understanding. You need to go read the manual.
Classic developer advice.
But on the other hand, you have a link to a dynamic, real-time social handle for system status. Is this text essentially capturing the eternal developer struggle of wondering, did I break my code or did the cloud go down?
It captures the psychology of debugging distributed systems perfectly. In modern development, you are never just relying on your own code. You are relying on a massive, complex chain of third-party infrastructure.
You're relying on their CI/CD pipelines, their container orchestration, their content delivery networks.
And any one of those layers can fail at any time. By directing the user to read the full documentation, the platform asserts its own rules. It places the responsibility on the developer to understand the nuances of Jekyll builds, custom domain CNME records, and the static site constraints we just discussed.
It pushes the developer to check their own syntax.
But the status link serves as an escape hatch for that responsibility. It provides absolute transparency into the environment.
Because sometimes it really isn't your fault.
Exactly. It acknowledges that sometimes the problem has absolutely nothing to do with your case-sensitive URLs or your missing index files. Mm. Sometimes a BGP routing error takes down a data center. Sometimes the background workers processing the deployments are queued up and delayed.
So by placing these two links side by side, GitHub provides a highly efficient resolution matrix.
Yes. You check the status page first.
And if the platform is reporting an outage or degraded performance in their Pages build system, you are instantly absolved. You close your IDE, you go get a coffee, and you wait. The problem is environmental.
But if that status page is completely green...
Oh, if it's green, the responsibility immediately snaps back to you. The system is operating perfectly, which means your instructions are flawed. You must return to the documentation.
There is no middle ground.
It's an incredibly elegant way to route human frustration into actionable next steps. It forces you to define whether you are fighting your own deployment or fighting the infrastructure itself.
It's a very binary reality check.
When we step back and look at the journey we've just taken through these few lines of error text, it's pretty remarkable. We started by looking at a jarring, abrupt 404 file not found page, something we instinctively try to navigate away from.
Something we usually just ignore.
Yeah. But by deeply unpacking the specific language of this digital dead end, we uncovered a masterclass in strict logic and server architecture.
We saw how the server explicitly declares its own health, proving that a broken link doesn't mean a broken infrastructure. It simply means the configured address lacks the requested inventory.
We analyzed the unyielding gatekeepers of existence on the web. We explored how a server views a single capitalized letter as a fundamentally different sequence of bytes.
And how it obfuscates locked file permissions behind a 404 error to protect the directory footprint.
We examined the calcified history of the index.html file, and how without that specific default memory pointer, a root URL request forces the server to paralyze itself to prevent exposing the raw file tree.
And finally, we looked at the resolution matrix, the delicate psychological balance between diving into heavy documentation to check our own syntax, and checking a real-time system status to see if the environment itself has failed.
All of this architectural philosophy is hidden in a page we view purely as an annoyance.
It's a lot of depth in a very small amount of text.
Which leaves me with a final thought I want you, listening right now, to take away and mull over.
Yeah, something to think about off screen.
Think back to that foundational sentence we started with. The site configured at this address does not contain the requested file.
The logistics delivery analogy.
Right. I want you to think about how deeply that exact scenario maps to our daily physical lives. How often do we show up to a configured address, you know? A scheduled meeting, a difficult conversation with a partner, a planned collaboration.
Oh, that's an interesting parallel.
Right. You show up and you find that the expected file, the connection, the energy, the specific outcome we requested simply isn't there. The environment is stable, the lights are on, the people have shown up, but the exact interaction we expected fails to render.
A human 404 error.
A human 404. When we hit those human 404s, what is our immediate instinct? Usually we blame the environment. We assume the system is broken.
We assume the other person is the problem.
Exactly. But perhaps we need to run our own diagnostics. Are we checking our own permissions? Are we communicating in a way that the other person is actually allowed to process?
Are we using the right syntax?
Yes. Are we checking our own index.html? Did we actually provide a clear default starting point for the conversation? Or did we just point to a vague directory and expect them to figure it out?
That's a really powerful way to frame it.
Before we declare a relationship or an environment completely broken, we might just need to check our syntax. The connection might not be down. We might just be requesting something that hasn't been deployed yet.
That is definitely something to think about.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. For everyone listening, the next time you hit a digital void, take a second to read the text. There is always logic hidden in the absence. Catch you next time.